Hello, everybody, and welcome to Speaking of Sustainability, the show where we introduce you to the leaders and change agents making a difference in the sustainability space. I'm your host, Colleen Felicki. After starting my composting business in 2017, I quickly realized that our communities are looking for more ways to be sustainable in their daily lives and to support eco-friendly businesses. I'm so excited to introduce you to some sustainable superheroes as we all look to make our planet a better place for years to come. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Speaking of Sustainability. I'm your host, Colleen Felicki, and I'm so excited to be here today and introduce you to our guest. But before I do so, I'd like to share with you a sustainable tip. Did you know compost is a form of recycling? It keeps resources in our region without relying on export. It turns waste into useful resources, helping businesses reduce their environmental impact and join the circular economy. Speaking of circular economy, I'd like to introduce you to our guest today. He is the owner and founder of Serica Systems and Unless Kids, Nick Esposito. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Colleen. It's good to see you.
Hey, it's great to see you too, Nick. Thanks for being here. Excited to chat circular systems. Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became interested in a circular economy? Well, actually, tell us also, what is a circular economy?
Yeah, so I'll start with a story real quick on my background and then how I got into it. So, I would say a lot of it starts with my love and connection to both rural and urban farming. So I've spent kind of the beginning of my career in sustainability in the city of Philadelphia and even beyond has been in the urban agriculture sector. I founded an organization called Philly Rooted. Co-founded an organization called Philly Rooted back in 2010, I guess, in West Philly, built a couple community gardens and farms. And then my wife and I run Emerald Street Community Farm now together in the East Kensington neighborhood of Philadelphia. And I like to say that farmers are the original zero wasters, right? If you run a farm the way it should be run, you're doing things like making your own compost, as you're acquainted with, saving your seed, building from things on the land. You know, you create this kind of like closed loop system where, you know, you're providing all the things you need. So I already kind of had that basis in my mind. I guess that opens up to like, you know, kind of what is a circular economy and what always kind of engaged me to it. So, you know, a circular economy is, you know, best described as kind of what it's not, right? So it starts with what kind of created the industrialization of the 20th century. And I readily admit it brought us a lot of amazing things. This computer I'm speaking to you on, the modern food system that we have of abundance, a modern medical system that's extending people's lives. There's a lot of good things that came from it. However, there are a lot of consequences that came with what we call like the linear economy, the take, make, and trash thing. So we take things out, we make these products, we sell them, and then we bury them or incinerate them.
That's a good way of describing it.
Yeah. I mean, it's if you explain that to a 5-year-old or if the aliens came down right now and asked how we were doing things, they think you're crazy. Like, it just doesn't make sense how we run this economy. It's not sustainable. The biggest things, you know, and again, this connects back to environmental justice. And I talk a lot more about this is, you know, the two main tenets of environmental justice are, you know, extraction, right? You're extracting things out of people's countries where a lot of times they're not seeing the wealth of that. Think about all the metals that are coming out, the big batteries, all that. And then the waste, where does the waste end up? It usually ends up in poorer communities, right? So there's this big problem, let alone, you know, what we're facing with emissions and climate change, resource depletion, all of those things and pollution. So what the circular economy does is it reimagines our system as that loop that I was talking about with farmers, right? Sure, we're going to need some raw resources like fibers for our clothes or metal or, you know, things for the batteries that we're going to electrify society. But when you take them out of the ground, and you make a product, you design that product with two really important things in mind. The first is durability. So you can use that product over and over and over again.
Yep.
Second is that you're able to disassemble that product when it's come to the end of its life and reclaim those materials. So you don't need to pull more fossil fuels out of the ground. You don't need to pull more metals out of the ground. You don't need to cut down more trees. You can actually recycle that material because we have so much on our planet right now. Now, that sounds great, right? But that's easier said than done. So what I've been spending, you know, the last 10 years of my life in the work that I've been doing, dedicating myself to a circular economy, is to really figure out those systems for how you make the circular economy actually work. So after, you know, my urban farming background, I got a job in city government. I spent almost 10 years in city government. And my last bit was as the zero waste and litter director. And that's really where I are for the city of Philadelphia. And through that work is really what exposed me to the circular economy. Like, zero waste is great. You want to shut down the incinerators and landfills, but how do you actually do it? Sadly enough, I parted ways with the city in 2020 during the pandemic when a lot of things were being shuffled around. And but I was fortunate because I got out and I connected with another colleague of mine, Samantha Witchin, and we formed a nonprofit called Circular Philadelphia. We're a membership-based organization that brings together all aspects of the circular economy, from large corporations to small independent businesses, even individuals who are driving this forward. And then that led me, you know, that work, more exposure to the circular economy, more seeing how important this was to found Circus Systems, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But honestly, just I kind of was getting jealous of these cool, like you being a cool business owner who runs these awesome businesses. And I'm like, man, Colleen looks like she's having, even though I know it's not always the fun and games running a business, but I wanted to start my own. But real quick, just to finish up on why the circular economy just really gets me, is what you're ultimately asking someone is to say, okay, how do we run this economy of abundance, right? Of the all of the food you can get it whenever you want in the supermarket. We have enough clothes on this planet to clothe the next six generations, right? We have all these things. But it's predicated on a business model that you have to keep selling more and more things.
Right.
So how do you kind of rethink that business model so you actually make things like durability, disassembly for those products economically feasible so we can continue to run the economy while not destroying the planet in the meantime? And that's what circular economy brings. And it's this really incredible like thought experiment, like engineering problem, just, you know, economics model that is just really fun to work in. And that's kind of what gets me up in the morning.
Wow. That was a phenomenal description. I had never heard it that way, the way you describe it. And I had asked you a question about, you had mentioned something about why sell something, you know, 100,000 times when you can make it and resell it. Describe that. I thought that was actually eye-opening to me. The way you describe circular economy.
Yeah, I mean that's probably a good segue into the founding tenets of Circus Systems. So as I said, after I left, you know, after I started Circular Philadelphia, I wanted to start a business, and I really looked at where can we make impact in the circular economy, and where I saw impact, the big potential for, is in the retail, the things that we use every day. Our line at Circus Systems is that the way we do retail in this world and this country, even in our regional economy, is terrible for the triple bottom line. It's bad for people. We have way too much stuff on our homes. It's bad for our planet. We're drowning in waste. And honestly, as someone who has a background in retail, it's bad for profits. So when you look at the economic model that you could actually do to sustain this, yeah, it begs that question. Why are we making 10,000 things to try to sell them 10,000 times? So I mentioned my retail background. Mm-hmm. I was in the book world for a while. I was a book publisher and I ran a bookstore. I know what it's like to be like, we're printing 5,000 books because we get a great, you know, discount per unit at like 5,000, and we're going to get all these reviews and we're going to sell and everything's going to work out great. And then for one reason or another, that doesn't always happen. You still find success. You still sold 3,000 books, 4,000 books even, but having another 1,000 books in boxes and schlepping them from one place to the next, I know what that feels like. So you're wasting kind of money, you're wasting product, you're wasting resources. So what we're asking at Circus Systems, and again, just changing the way we think about this economic model, is what if we were able to have 1,000 things, but sell them 10,000 times? Because we set the system up holistically between the manufacturing, the retailer, the consumer, to make that work. And that's really what kind of guides Circus Systems to build the e-commerce sites that we're doing right now.
So tell me a little bit about, I know that describes some of the business model, but the business model of Circus Systems, does it include other businesses besides Unless Kids?
Yeah. So Circus Systems has this vision for how we can change retail and make it more sustainable, more circular, and prolong it. So when I looked at like the different ways that we can, well, first off, Circus Systems is what it sounds like. It's the systems builder. So it controls all the technology, the operations, the whole playbook for how you stand up what we call these brand verticals. So when we started looking at, okay, where's the first place that we want to make impact? Kids' toys just jumped out at me. I'm a parent. I have a 10 and a 6-year-old. I've been through it. Colleen, I know you have kids, and you know, hopefully there's some parents. What's that?
I can relate.
Yeah. And hopefully there's a lot of parents on here, even other caregivers or aunts or uncles or grandparents who are like, yeah, I know that feeling of you just get so many kids' toys. They just, you're inundated with them, with all the kids' stuff. So I saw a pain point in the market, which is something we always, even our business owners at Circular Philadelphia, we try to really put forth, like, yes, we want to save the planet and do circularity, but like, what is the pain point that you're trying to solve for a consumer right now? So that was the first, the thing that kind of got us. And then we saw, you know, a really good opportunity to kind of to move into to kids, the kids space. So that's how Unless Kids was born. So what we're looking to do with Unless Kids is, you know, create that first model that shows that this thing works. And I can talk a little bit about the business model in a second. And then once we do that, we can move on to other product lines. So the Circus Systems builds another system for another type of product, and we keep going. And the reason that we took this approach was that, sure, we could have dreamed up and theorized this awesome system and went to some big manufacturer, some big online retailer, and tried to sell it to them. But, you know, we were concerned that, one, they weren't ready for it. They couldn't actually visualize the systems themselves. And two, that even if they did try to adopt it, they wouldn't do it in the way that we're envisioning. We want to really show not only does this work, but it can thrive. And I mean, we're already starting and we're already showing that. So so that's why we're taking this approach. And yeah, we're super excited to launch it.
And what area are you located in currently with that, with Unless Kids?
Yeah, so Unless Kids is just starting right now in what's called the River Wards neighborhoods of Philadelphia. So it's basically from Port Richmond down to Northern Liberties, kind of along the Delaware River. We're starting with a small pilot because, you know, again, this is, while we're leaning into a lot of existing consumer behavior, and we're not, that's a big tenet of our business. We're not trying to depart too much from how people buy things now. Like, you can't ask the consumer to change their entire way. Some people will do it. You'll catch a certain amount of people, but you have to kind of lean into how things are going right now. So we're, you know, built a system for that, but there is still some adaptation to what we're doing, how it works, how the flow works. So we're just starting with a smaller group of people just to make sure that our operations work, that the website, everything is just, you know, running as it should. And then from there, we are prepared for what we call replicability, not scale. We call it, how can we replicate this into many communities and continue to grow into Philadelphia, the surrounding area, the Mid-Atlantic, and then from there.
Fantastic. So that means we'll see less toys at the curb, you know, driving around on trash day. I see a lot of that. So one other thing I wanted to ask you, how do you envision the, or how does the consumer experience it? So walk me through, like, I'm interested in, purchasing some of these toys. Is there, you know, do I go onto your website? And like, how does that work?
Yeah. So basically the way the system works is we set it up, you know, as like an e-commerce site, but it is membership based. So the first thing we get people to do is to come on, create an account, and get a membership. Now, okay, we offer a lot of membership specials, like free membership for 6 months just to try it out. The reason that we do memberships is that because we're a local system and a regional system, we have to have some kind of safeguard on that someone from like California can't just come onto the site and buy something. That shipping is, would kill us on our business model. So that's why we're keeping it local. And that's a trend that's another thing about the circular economy that's so interesting, is that it thrives on a kind of regional supply chain model.
Yeah.
But you're seeing a lot of investors, a lot of people in that space say like, yeah, the main way that hub and spoke model that people use now, it doesn't work. And we saw it during the pandemic. I mean, there's a lot of vulnerabilities to it, to be shipping kind of all over the country like that, just from one place. So to be this small to kind of start and compete with Amazon is really challenging. So you're actually, there's a better economic opportunity for startups or newer businesses by doing the regional model. So someone comes on, they create their account, they become a member, and they create for a child what's called a toy chest. So instead of a shopping cart, we have the toy chest. You go onto our site after you've created the toy chest, and you can browse all these different toys that we have. And everything is at a discount. We have new stuff. We have like new, gently loved, well loved.
Gently loved.
We did a lot. I mean, another thing to fuel the platform, we didn't just create this in a vacuum or me come up like, oh, this is what I want when I was a parent. We've interviewed like hundreds of parents, like hearing about how they like the language, how they like this. Again, we're really trying to approach it from user experience, value, convenience, the things that really drive any kind of commerce, especially e-commerce. So we're very attuned to that. So yeah, someone goes on. And again, to that value piece, everything being at a discount, we're trying to make this accessible. We don't want this to be a boutique, like, oh, you can only afford sustainability if you have a lot of money. Sure. We don't believe that. So everything's at a discount. You're able to fill up your toy chest. You check out. We show up to your house with a physical toy chest. We have these cute green bins that say open for endless fun. My kids love it. My son first read that. He was like, this is so cool. So we show up. You have the toys. After a time, kids are going to get bored. They're going to read the book a million times. They're going to do the puzzle a million times. They're going to move on from Paw Patrol to Spider-Man. And they're just like, okay, I don't really want this anymore. But again, it's not a one for one. Kids are unpredictable. Some things they're like, I will never part with this toy. You're like, I didn't think you would. And then other ones, they're like, I'm done after like, you know, a week of playing with it. So when a parent and a child is ready for more toys, they can go back onto Unless Kids, onto the website, pick out the toys that they want, put them in their toy chest, but every other toy that they had already bought previously still exists in that toy chest. So they can go forward and hit the swap button on it. So you can hit swap on, and again, it's not a one for one. You can buy 10 new puzzles and 5 books and only give us back a couple, like 3 puzzles and 2 books. But anything you just don't want, you hit that button, you check out. When we show up to your house with the new bin, we just take the old bin away.
I love it.
Our workshop. We refurb it, get it kind of cleaned up, make sure it's all in working condition, get it back on our shelves and sell it over and over again.
It really seems like something that is flexible, accommodating, you know, so you said they could keep the toys that they want to keep.
If there's a toy that they want to keep and their kid's like never going to part with it, we basically have, it's like the fine print, but it's not fine because we put it pretty prominently on the website. If you keep a toy for over a year, we just charge you the difference of like the full retail based on condition. So basically the way our pricing works is that we have certain, you know, as things get older, we discount them like a thrift store, whatever, things like that. Then we have another percentage discount that we call the circularity discount. So basically if you want to keep it for over a year, you're not putting it back in circulation. You just lose that discount and we charge you the difference. But again, it's still a good deal for what you get on the site. And it allows us to, you know, keep moving these toys. And I'm glad you picked up on that because again, we're trying to lean into what consumer habits are like right now, how people buy. Like some people don't really like to be locked into these subscriptions where they have to get something every month or they have to give one back to get the other. We were told early on by a business advisor that you never want to tell someone they can't buy something from you. You want them to like buy what they want. So yeah, we try to keep it flexible. I'm glad you used that word while also connecting people to the mission that we're keeping their homes decluttered and we're keeping things out of the landfill and incinerator. We guarantee circularity or recycling. We work with a local recycler, Rabbit Recycling, where whenever something has reached the total end of its life, it goes there.
Ah, it makes me feel so good to know as a parent and seeing all of the items that would accumulate in our house. We would try to give it to neighbors and friends and kind of swap that way, but there really wasn't this platform that we could do it in a more organized way. So I am so excited for this and for your customers.
Thank you.
Glad to share it.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, how can folks that are listening or viewing this find you on social media and online?
Yeah, so our Instagram is really fun. We do a lot of fun videos. So you can find Unless Kids at Unless Kids on Instagram. You also can go to the Unless Kids. Like I said, you can see the site now. You can go to the site. You can check out all the toys. You can see how it works. We just haven't opened it up for signups yet because we're still doing this member pilot that's just in the River Boards. But we have very, very fast expansion plans as we gain investment. But you can join our newsletter and basically we just put you on there. You put your zip code in so we know when we're in your zip code. You'll start getting all the information to sign up and get your information.
Oh, that's great. So it's unlesskids.com?
Unlesskids.com. Yeah.
Okay.
And then if you want to follow, you know, check out we're on LinkedIn for Circa Systems. And again, that's where we tell like our journey as a company. And that's where, you know, we interact with investors and other thought leaders and stuff like that. So if you're more on the side of like wanting to see what like the larger company is doing, you can check out our LinkedIn.
But, yeah. Fantastic. Well, we're almost out of time, but before we get out of here, let's do our breakdown. So what is something you feel many people aren't aware of when it comes to where most greenhouse gases come from?
Sure. And this is a funny question because I feel like anyone in their issue area, it's like, that's where all the emissions come from. Like transportation, that's all the emissions. Like eating meat, that's all the emissions. And it's like, it almost brings to mind like Homer Simpson's line in The Simpsons where he's like, you can use statistics to prove anything. 60% of all people know that. It's like, not to discount data and things, but I think when I came into the waste world was it was looked at as like, oh, waste is like 3% of emissions from like methane coming out of landfills and incinerators. But how does that waste get created? It gets created by all of this activity that we do, the making of things, the shipping of things, the moving things, you know. So from what I've, you know, read, I've seen like 70% of emissions. And now I just use a statistic, now I sound like Homer Simpson, but 70% of emissions just come from that general activity of us buying things, using things, and discarding things. And the fact that we do it so fast just doesn't make any sense. You know, it's like, what we're trying to ask manufacturers and big businesses is, you know, why make something that breaks every year because you want to sell 20 in 20 years? What if you made something that lasts 20 years, but we'll sell it for you 20 times in those 20 years? So how do we kind of reduce that while still keeping that economic opportunity going? And with that, those emissions will come down.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Thank you for your time today. And I hope everyone learned something about circular economy and how we can all make a difference.
Yeah. Thanks for spreading the good word, Colleen. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. Thank you for tuning in to another awesome episode of Speaking of Sustainability. Please follow and support our guests as we encourage you to continue doing your part to make a difference in our global community. And don't forget to rate, like, and share. See you next time.